change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, welcome to the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm your host, Mickey Desai. I'm very happy today to be speaking with our friend, Dave Pauly. Dave answered the call when I said I was looking for guests who could talk about governance and ethics. And Dave's got a wealth of expertise in this area. So Dave, how are you doing?
I am doing great, Mickey. How are you today?
I'm okay. It's a good day. I think the sun is out. It's going to be cold tonight, though.
Yep, it is. I appreciate you having me back on.
Well, I'm glad we could do it. So, you know, we're talking about, I don't know, when I think of governance, I think of the thing that in my mind is like trying to differentiate of what a healthy board is versus a not so healthy board is, and maybe take a look at ethical issues that can be done either that can be addressed. Let me rephrase that. I'm getting ahead of myself. And taking a look at issues in ethics that may be a result of just ignorance or even just like some sense of maliciousness. And I know there's a lot there to unpack, but how do we get started on that conversation?
Well, you know, I think you've hit on something really insightful that, you know, there are a lot of bad boards out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes it is a function of aberrant behavior, you know, and some of my boards, I've had people that I'm like, you know, what the hell is wrong with you?
Right.
But more often it's boards just don't understand their role. And, you know, that not only they don't understand their role, but they don't understand that how dangerous that a bad board can be both to the organization and to the board itself. Yeah. You know, and, you know, I tell my clients in most healthy functioning nonprofits, the board of directors is the CEO's most valuable tool. And, you know, boards are always, oh, well, I got to fill all the board seats. One of the things that boards don't understand is that how valuable that seat is, you know, and so they don't recruit effectively. Board seats are more valuable left empty than they are being filled with poor performing directors.
Exactly. That's right. So, you know, again, we've talked about this in the past, but I think we should unpack it again. What separates a good director from a bad one?
Well, I think, pardon me, there's a misnomer, first of all, that running a nonprofit is easier than running a for-profit.
Very true.
Yeah, at all nonprofits, CEOs have to contend with more limited resources, more unclear performance expectations, and the barriers of entry to board service are significantly lower than they are for for-profit boards. So let's at a very high level just talk about the board members we want versus the board members that we get. Right. So, you know, great board members, first of all, they understand the difference between governance and management. They understand their legal duties, you know, that there are actually laws that dictate what board member responsibilities are. And that, you know, typically the legal duties are a duty of care, a duty of loyalty, and a duty of obedience. And we'll explain what those are in a second. But also then great board members also understand their ethical obligations, you know, which is a duty to give, a duty to help fundraise, a duty to contribute, you know, time and talents and to advocate. Mm-hmm. Now, those are the board members we want. Usually the board members we get, first of all, are the ones who don't understand the difference between governance and management. They believe that they're there to manage. A lot of times also we get board members who are passionate about the mission, but do not understand business. Yeah, but having worked in the arts, my personal favorite are the board members who are there just because they care about the social aspect. They like going to the parties.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of times board members get there because other board members think they will be great. You know, this one, I see this all the time. Boards love to add attorneys and wealth managers. And it's because they believe that, oh, the attorney, they'll get access to the attorneys and the wealth manager's clients. Well, a good attorney or a good wealth manager is actually not going to give you access to their clients.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then sometimes you just got board members who don't even know why they're there, but they are.
Right. I must say, in my own consulting experiences, I haven't run into that yet. Most people I meet are at least somewhat connected to the mission, even if they don't know what their duties are or how to go about conducting them. But apart from that, they may not know simply what to do on a day-to-day basis as a board member.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that that's, if we were going to say, what are the two most common problems that plague nonprofit boards is, first off, they don't understand what governance is.
Right.
And the second is they don't understand their legal and their ethical responsibilities as board members well enough to practice it.
Right. All right. So, so how do you get a board member to understand what governance is?
Yeah, I think there's first of all, you've got the starting point with understanding the differences between for-profits and non-for-profits. And this is not an intuitive one. The biggest one that I find lots of boards don't understand is that no one owns a nonprofit. Legally, the way they are incorporated in this country, they are held in trust by their boards on behalf of society, and that, you know, that the community owns the board. The board members just are there acting as our representatives. And again, and I state repeatedly to boards this, you've heard me say this on, I think, every time I've been on your show. Mm-hmm. They have to understand it. Being a nonprofit is not a license to lose money.
Right.
Yeah. So getting boards to understand the difference between governance and management is that they understand governance as a, you know, is the act of governing. It relates to decisions that define expectations, grant power, and verify performance. Whereas management is the administration of the organization, whether it's a business or a nonprofit organization or even a government body. Mm-hmm. Managers manage, boards govern.
Right.
And this is usually defined in the bylaws. So management will include all the activities of setting the strategy for an organization, coordinating the efforts of its employees or its volunteers to accomplish its objectives, determining how to distribute, you know, all of its resources, such as their financial, their natural, their technology, and their human resources. When we're explaining this to boards that we consult with, it's usually an eye opener because they think that they're there to manage and make these decisions. I'm like, no, you're there to define expectations, grant power, and verify performance.
Right.
And this is typically defined in their bylaws.
So real quick, and just to put a nice underlined black and white example on the table for people who may still be confused, can we come up with some examples of what governance behaviors are versus what management behaviors are?
Sure. So, one of let me give you some bad examples first.
Yeah, sure.
So I've got a nonprofit that I'm consulting with right now, and the board instructed the CEO to change the branding, and she did. She worked with an ad agency, came up with a new brand, and they came back and they didn't like it, so they went and hired their own brand agency to do the brand change for her. I'm like, okay, now you've crossed into, there's a term of art in the legal world that defines what they've done. They've penetrated the corporate veil.
Mm-hmm.
And by penetrating the corporate veil, they've actually created a liability issue for them.
Oh.
So, yeah, and we'll talk in a second about legal and ethical duties.
Yeah.
But, you know, that governance is, they should be approving a budget and then holding management accountable for living by that budget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they, the things that nonprofits typically go to their boards for are high level decisions, that are defined in their bylaws. So for example, my last company, branding was part of management. So I could change the brand. People may or may not have liked it, but that was a management decision based on what I felt was effective. However, the bylaws specifically said I could not go out and make a merger or buy another company without the involvement of the board.
Right.
And that's appropriate. You know, that's you're fundamentally changing the nature of the organization. That's a place where the board should be consulted.
Yes. All right.
On a day-to-day basis, you know, you're not merging, making mergers every day. But, but you know, making sure that the organization is, you know, at the starting point of the year, the board should require a CEO to present a plan to them for the year, both a financial plan as well as an operating plan. This is how, you know, this is how we're going to generate revenue and how much revenue. This is how we're going to spend it on the mission. And then at every meeting after that, the board is entitled to expect the CEO to come in and say, and this is how I'm doing against the plan.
Right.
And if the, you know, if they're delivering on the plan, great, everything's working. If they're not delivering on the plan, then the board is within its rights to say, okay, what are you doing to deliver on this?
Right.
And if they can't, ultimately they replace the CEO.
Right, exactly. Do you find that it's hard to get people to understand where those boundaries are, and how do you do the training to illustrate and get people to respect those boundaries and get folks to stay in their lanes?
Yes, I do find it's very hard. Okay. I have a history of pissing off boards when I tell them you're in the wrong lane. Yeah, but I think the starting point for this is helping boards understand their legal and ethical duties.
Yeah.
And their risks. So let me start with the risks before I define the duties, because if you engage in penetrating the corporate veil, you cross over into management's role, then you're essentially violating a check and balance. And the law sets up and says boards, you know, because they're not in management lanes, should not be crossing into this. But if they do, then they can be held liable for their actions. And let's talk a little bit about how the legal responsibilities are set out and accountability, so then we can talk about the risk.
Yeah, absolutely.
So first of all, the Internal Revenue Service defines the public responsibility, the boards of responsibilities that can be held accountable. And it starts with the Internal Revenue Service. When the Internal Revenue Service says that, yes, organization X, Y, and Z, we grant you a 501c3, the expectation is that your board is going to comply with all state and federal nonprofit laws, and that the board members recognize that they have a fiduciary responsibility on behalf of society.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, boards, these duties that boards are held accountable for based on the federal and state laws fall broadly into three categories. The first is the duty of care, which says that the board is going to act carefully and responsibly. They're going to conduct business with the same degree of diligence that an ordinary prudent person would in similar situations. The second set of legal duties they have are duties of loyalty. And that means that they have to give allegiance to the organization at all times, avoiding self-dealing and handling conflicts of interest appropriately. And third, they have a duty of obedience, which means that they have to comply with all state and federal laws, all regulations governing their business, their mission, and nonprofit organizations, and adhering to the articles of incorporation of the bylaws that they submitted when they got their nonprofit status.
Right. Can I go back and interrupt for a moment and say that duty of care requires that board members will act like an ordinarily prudent person, but isn't that sort of a subjective term anymore?
Well, it is, but I think, you know, so let me give you an example. So the last nonprofit I led, I was the 10th CEO, and I got the job because the 9th CEO was in jail. She embezzled her previous employer into insolvency and was doing the same thing in our organization. And the board that hired me recognized they had violated the duty of care because they were not holding my predecessor to the appropriate set of standards. Right. Now, the only thing that they didn't do, you know, they came back and said, our bad, we were not paying attention to this. but they did not violate the corporate veil. When they realized what was going on, they acted appropriately. They removed that CEO, went and got a new CEO and said, you know, here's a big old crappy situation, clean it up.
Right.
I have worked with other boards and other nonprofits that have stepped across into and violated that that corporate veil by getting involved in management because they believe they are indemnified. And here's the catch. They're not. If you violate the corporate penetrate the corporate veil, then officer and director's insurance may not protect or indemnify the boards from illegal action if they break laws or they knowingly disregard their legal obligations. It's not a get out of jail free card.
Right.
And you know, one nonprofit that I've worked with, the board chair, it was a similar situation to what I found in my last company. The board chair knowingly turned a blind eye to embezzlement. She actually participated, but she benefited from it. She could have been held both legally liable if somebody decided to press charges against her, but also if donors, or in this case, the nonprofit had a big government contract, if donors or the government came in and sued the board and the board chair for failing to have done this, the O&D insurance for this particular nonprofit would have said, we do not indemnify against illegal actions.
Right.
You knowingly participated in a crime. You are knowingly liable.
Right. I mean, there's a lot there I want to talk about too, in terms of what it means to really consciously violate ethics or violate the law, but that's, I think, a topic for another day. Okay. So three duties: duty of care, duty of loyalty, duty of obedience. And that again also translates to certain kinds of behaviors, or at least you say something here that I think is critical for board performance. And I use a different set of vocabulary when I'm talking to boards about it, but I wanted to talk about board member obligations first in order to, you know, what are their behaviors that they must conduct in order to fulfill those duties?
Sure. Now, at our fundraising search, we have a whole 2-day board governance and effectiveness training. And
right.
So, you know, being an effective board goes over and above just being an ethical board. You know, it's what I always say, you know, just because you haven't broken the law doesn't mean you're an effective board.
Right.
But, you know, at a minimum, you know, there are ethical obligations that the donors are entitled to hold the board accountable to.
Okay.
And the first of those is the obligation to contribute. That could be their time, dedicate their time, dedicate their talent, dedicate their treasure.
Right.
Board institutional funders, foundations in particular, have started really holding board's feet to the fire on this, saying if 100% of your board members are not donating, we will not fund you. And almost every grant application I have ever submitted, I've had to send in a board diversity statement and a board fundraising statement saying right. that, yes, I certify everyone's there.
So, and again, to interrupt for a moment, why is that important? Why do you think funders want to know that you have 100% board participation?
I think it comes down to that the board has to show it's invested. It has skin in the game.
Yeah.
And you know, the second obligation ties directly to your question, which is the obligation to fundraise.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that you are signing up to ensure the viability of the organization on behalf of society. And I love this because I will always have, not always, but a lot of times I'll meet with a board and get this on the table and someone will come at me and say, oh, Dave, you don't understand. This was never intended to be a fundraising board. And I come back at them and say, no, you don't understand.
Right.
Every board is a fundraising board.
Yeah.
And that usually leads to an icy couple of minutes. but it's true. It's and fundraising is broad. Fundraising isn't just asking people for money.
Right.
Sometimes it's making connections. Sometimes it is doing research. But understanding that you know, fundraising is the role of, you know, everybody in the organization. I tell everybody in the organization, everyone here is a fundraiser. Not everybody has to be able to ask for money. The CEO does. You know, so one of the things that I think made me a successful nonprofit CEO is I'm shameless. I can ask anyone for anything.
Sure.
But, you know, the board's got to take its obligation to fundraise and to participate in fundraising seriously.
Right. That's right. You've used the phrase time, talent, and treasures. I use the phrase be a doer, a donor, and a door opener.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that last one, that door opener, really goes to the third ethical obligation, which is the obligation to advocate for the organization. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you've got to be a positive ambassador for the organization. You know, back to, you know, I've seen, you don't necessarily have to like or agree to everything that the organization is doing, but if you're going to be part of the board and the board and the organization elect to go in a certain direction and you choose to stay on that board, you got to toe the line with it. To your point on earlier on, what I'll call the aberrant behavior of board members. I have worked with board members that have, I disagree, so I'm going to go out and trash the organization publicly. Well, that doesn't help.
Right. No, exactly. okay. And you know, for the record, I don't think you're that shameless. So.
Oh, Mickey, you have not been on the end of the other end of a fundraising campaign from me.
Fair enough. Okay, so you've run into these situations. You've got the board. You've got a captive audience for 2 days. How do you encourage them to fix their problems?
You know, I think the starting point, and it's an important one, is the CEO or the executive director cannot fix the board. And I see this a lot. A lot of times the board is like, you know, putting pressure on the CEO. This board is awful. Fix it. And the CEO has no authority to.
Right.
The boards have to fix themselves and have to hold each other accountable. That's part of the job. And this is sometimes the uncomfortable part of the job with the board chair. Board chairs have got to be strong. So I've gone into boards where there have been, for the most part, most people don't show up to anything saying, "Hey, I really want to do a crappy job at this."
Right.
Yeah. I used to say nobody, you know, says that, but then I'm pretty sure I found at least one on my last board.
Oh, God. Oh, man.
But yeah, the starting point of the board and the board chair is you got to hold each other accountable, and that's sometimes uncomfortable.
Yes,
I've gone in, I've had an empower board saying, "You all have to make an ethical agreement with each other that we can say things in here, and we can hold each other accountable and not accept aberrant behavior or unacceptable behavior, and not take it personally." Especially in the South, we have a high tolerance for asinine behavior. You know, because bless your heart, we can't tell you what you're doing is rude, is inappropriate. That'd be rude. We can talk about it behind your back, though, because that's just gossip. When I say it like that in front of the board, they will all see it. And I'll say, and like, you know, you all do this.
Yes.
You know, there is someone at this table that you disagree with how they approach things or how they communicate, but you're not going to tell them to their face. And so, and And sometimes, you know, sometimes I have to do it as the consultant.
Right.
You know, it's what I'm doing in front of the boards. It's, you know, if you've got somebody on there that's going to be aberrant, and I can say, okay, time out. You're giving a good example of exactly what you're not supposed to be doing.
Right.
It'll also usually it'll be the one that says, Dave, you don't understand. This is not a fundraising board.
Right. Exactly. Right. No, that's where my Yankee tendencies tend to collide headlong with that cultural expectation there. Yes. So,
yeah, it's I finally figured it out. You know, having lived in the South for over 30 years, my first 2 years here, I thought I was doing great because no one ever told me what I was doing wrong. And my heart got blessed left and right. It's when I was a stand-up comedian, we used to talk about it. It's like, it takes you a long time in the South to realize, oh, that's how they talk to you when they don't like you. Like,
right, right.
Les Johan, aren't you just the smartest young man? And don't you have the loveliest complexion? And what they're really saying is, go to hell.
Right, exactly. And it kind of makes you wonder where that came from. Why is that a uniquely Southern thing? Is there a geographic equivalent somewhere else in this country, you know?
Yeah, well, actually, there is a geographic equivalent. In the upper Midwest, there's something similar that's called Minnesota Nice.
Oh.
And the way my colleagues in Minnesota used to describe Minnesota Nice is it said basically it's courtesy wrapped around self-loathing.
Oh, that is brilliant. Back to governance. Yes, I've only worked with one Minnesota nonprofit, so I'm trying to rack my brain if you know I ran headlong into that and just didn't realize it.
It's probably, you know, you piss them off and instead of calling you on it, they give you a nice hot dish.
Right. That's hilarious. Oh my God. All right. So CEOs and executive directors cannot fix the board problems. Boards must fix themselves and hold each other accountable. Yes.
Right.
And we've already mentioned that D&O policy insurance, directors and officers insurance policies don't indemnify board from actions that are knowingly done, like if they knowingly do something illegal.
Right. Sometimes even if they unknowingly do it, you know, that there's an old law saying ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Right.
You can't go back and say, you know, say, oh, we didn't know embezzlement wasn't acceptable. And like, right. Well, you should have.
Yeah, you should have. Exactly. So how does, you know, our fundraising search has a program to do some board training, right?
We do. We have a program. It's called Ready to Board. And the full, what we try to do is we help boards find good board members. Yeah. But we also try to help board members when they're joining understand their duties and responsibilities. In the best of all worlds, somebody joins a board already knowing all this stuff, but if nothing else, we can actually train them and help explain it to them.
So, you know, as part of this 2-day program, are you also teaching boards how to be effective, like with concrete examples and lists of things that they must do?
Yeah, absolutely, Mickey. That's the second half of the training. You know, the first half of the training is just teaching them how not to be, you know, an illegal board,
right?
Or how to operate legally. Being effective is a whole different ball of wax. And so, what we do is we run them. The second half of the training is we run them through, you know, the keys to being effective boards. You know, there's six of them that we talk about, which, you know, covers everything from how to ensure that the CEO and the board stay in their lanes to how to conduct good board meetings and how to conduct board recruitment strategically. The goal of this is not just to keep the board out of jail.
Right.
It's to actually make the board into the effective tool that the CEO needs.
Right. Yeah. If your primary purpose is to keep the board out of jail, something is really going wrong there.
Right. Absolutely. Not that it's not important. You know, it's like we don't want them being locked up. But I used to always say, you know, it's a very, very low standard of behavior to say, hey, what we're doing is not illegal.
Right. None of our board members are currently serving time. That's not a virtue. That's not a selling point.
Yeah, it's certainly not something that's going to impress a foundation.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, I don't really want to get in front of the Hearst Foundation and say, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you have like the you know, X number of days without an accident.
Right.
Yeah. X number of years without an abort indictment.
Right. So board effectiveness.
Yeah. So really, yeah. And I think it's actually, you know, sometime in the future, we should actually dig into that one, because that's a whole different ball of wax from governance and ethics.
Yeah, I agree. Let's do it. Let's definitely circle back and do that sometime. Dave, this is excellent stuff as always. I can't wait to share this. We'll keep you posted before the episode goes live. Is there any parting words of quick advice or wisdom for our listeners before we sign off? And as part of that, how do folks get in contact with you if they have any questions?
Sure. I think the really most important thing is, you know, nonprofit board, you know, a dysfunctional nonprofit board is sadly not all that rare, but it's not required that they can be fixed. There are lots of great effective nonprofit boards out there, and it's not rocket scientists. We can show you how to do it. If you want to learn about what our organization does or get in touch with me, you can find us through ourfundraisingsearch.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Dave. As always, thanks for making the time to do this thing with me today. And I look forward to the next time we have an opportunity to do this.
This is super. Thanks, Mickey. This is a lot of fun.
Yes, sir. To our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode. We invite your support of our efforts via Patreon. Please find us at patreon.com/nonprofitsnapcast. In the meantime, we'll see you with another episode in a few days.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.